Good morning, and welcome to Writers on Writing on KUCI FM, broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine campus, and on the web at kuci.org and on iTunes at College Radio. Today is Wednesday, August 6, 2014. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and my guest today is Bay Area literary agent Andy Ross. And before I introduce him and get him on, I need to say that the opinions and views that you hear on this show are not those of the University Regents, but my opinions and Andy Ross's opinions and the opinions of the two of us. Anyway, prior to opening his literary agency in 2008, Andy Ross was the owner of the legendary Cody Books in Berkeley for 30 years. During that time, he sold more than 10 million books and hosted over 5,000 events for some of the world's greatest authors. In 1989, Cody's was firebombed in retaliation for the store featuring Salman Rushdie's The Satanic Verses, which made Ross and his staff ever more certain that they would continue carrying the novel. His agency represents books in a wide range of nonfiction genres, including but not limited to narrative nonfiction, science, journalism, history, and current events. They also represent literary, commercial, and young adult fiction. For nonfiction, he looks for writing with a strong voice, robust story arc, and books that tell a big story about culture and society by authors with the authority to write about their subject. In fiction, he likes stories about real people in the real world. He doesn't work with poetry, short stories, art and photography, adult science fiction and fantasy, romance, horror, and YA paranormal. Andy Ross is a member of the Association of Author Representatives. Hi, Andy.
Hi, thank you for inviting me, Barbara.
Hey, I'm so glad that you could be on. What brought you to mind most immediately was the other day you posted a query letter as Tolstoy would write it. And as we get into this show a bit, I would love to talk about that. But let's begin by hearing from you the process of segueing from bookseller to literary agent. I'm so curious about that, how that happened.
Well, Cody's closed in 2006 after being in business for 50 years, and I had been a bookseller all my life. From I got out of graduate school in the early 70s and decided I didn't want to pursue an academic career, and I became a bookseller. So I knew that bookselling was really the only thing I knew how to do. I suspected that my future lay in sacking groceries at Safeway. I don't know. I just woke up one night and decided to be a literary agent, and that's exactly what I did, and I love every minute of it. Well, that's not exactly true. I get the worst part of my job is getting rejection letters, which is probably the worst part of any writer's job. I think of it sort of as my social life in high school. But when I do sell a book, it is a very emotional experience, and I love it.
I think it's so interesting how that happened. And when I lived in San Francisco in the early 80s, I used to take BART or somehow get over to Cody's, and I loved your bookstore. So it's so interesting to hear this. Talk about how you arrived at your specialties, at what you like to represent in nonfiction. And in nonfiction, let's begin there.
Well, I kind of thought when I got started that I would kind of play off my fame or notoriety, whatever it was, in Berkeley, and that I would be working a lot with scholars. And I do work with a few, but it really hasn't happened that way. First of all, most of my clients are nowhere near Berkeley. They're from as far away as South Korea and New Zealand. And although I do have a couple of books by scholars, and I'm very proud of them, most of them aren't. And I've started working more in fiction. I've got books by the person who is the world's greatest expert on the Talmud, all the way to books like The World's Ugliest Dogs, all of which have been fun to work on. And I've got cookbooks. I've got two novels coming out the same week this month. I've got a book on Latino gangs. You know, it's a great job. It's just I can kind of dabble in anything I want to.
So do you, when something comes in the door, and I don't want to get into the query letter yet, because I think that deserves a lot of time, but when something comes in the door, is it a gut reaction that makes you know that you have to take it on, or are you thinking rationally, thinking about marketing, thinking about, you know, sales, can I sell this, and
well, both. One of the things that I found out is, you know, the conventional wisdom is, it's, you know, publishing is just business, they don't care about quality, things like that, and that isn't really true. I mean, a book has to be good, because it's very competitive, it's very difficult to get published, but it also has to be good from a marketing point of view. And so both of those are important to me. So when I see, with fiction, it's very difficult. It tends to be kind of an emotional engagement with the story, and any agent or editor will probably tell you that they don't know if the book's going to work in the first paragraph, but they're going to know that the author has the ability to make it work. And one of the books that's coming out this month, well, two of them that are coming out, I had made a decision, about 75% of my decision, in the first paragraph. I was just blown over. With nonfiction, it's much more difficult, but with nonfiction, you don't really need to write the whole book. You need to have a book proposal, which is like a business plan.
How much do you get involved with that book proposal? So you receive the query letter, you say, yeah, send me the book proposal. The writer sends you the book proposal, and it's perfect or almost perfect, or where does it have to be for you to get involved? And then how involved do you get with perfecting it?
It's usually imperfect, but I mean, sometimes I get them perfect, but more often than not, I have to work, and in some cases, I have to work for months. One of the books that I sold, called Water 4.0, and which is probably the defining book now on drinking water, written by a scholar, when I first got it, it was quite a bit different just in terms of structure and well, and content as well, and we worked for months on this thing, and it ended up being a very good book proposal. We ended up getting offers from Yale and Harvard University Presses. The guy at Harvard said it was the best book proposal he had ever seen, which I'm kind of bragging about that now. We ended up going with Yale for other reasons.
Mm-hmm. Earlier, you mentioned that you have clients. Maybe you said Korea, New Zealand. How important is it in signing with an agent or choosing an agent that you meet him or her? And the same goes for the agent. How important is it for you to meet your client?
These days, we live in the internet age, and I have a number of clients who I have never met. My client in South Korea, who ended up writing, also sort of, he's a scholar, and he ended up writing what is now the most important book on the politics of North Korea. Until the book got published, I had never spoken to him. We had emailed each other. One of the books that's coming out next month, the Clairvoyant Calle Ocho, the novel, takes place in South Florida, and I have never met the author, Anjanette Delgado. We talk a lot on the phone. I feel like I've known her all my life. In the other novel that's coming out, Beauty of the Broken, which is a YA novel, I only met the author once. But we're very close.
Now, is there ageism in publishing? I mean, if a writer comes to you who is older rather than younger, does that influence whether you take on their work? Or do you think that influences editors as well to buy a book or not?
You know, that's a very good question. No one's ever asked that before, and I would have to say that at least in some cases the answer is yes. My oldest client is 83. He's also my most famous client, Daniel Ellsberg.
Uh-huh.
And he's a major historical figure, so I didn't have a lot of difficulty selling his book. What I find in fiction, and actually in nonfiction as well, is that people don't seem to be interested in the 60s. All that much. Part of the reason is a lot of people don't remember the 60s. Part of the reason is probably the fact that most of the editors are women, more and mostly kind of in their 30s or 40s. And I think that has something to do with it, just as in the 50s and early 60s, most of the editors were men. And to some extent, the great writers were sort of Jewish men, you know, and it's kind of changed since then, I think.
So you said the answer is yes. So how will that affect, you know, a query letter comes in? Are you wondering about the writer personally, or can you hear where they are on the age spectrum through the
lines? Well, no, I mean, it's really about the writing. And if I get excited about it, there are no rules in publishing. There's just sort of, I don't know, I have feelings, because I'm always looking at something from two perspectives. One is the quality of the writing, and the other is whether this book is going to find an audience. And the reason I look at it that way is because when I have to sell it to a publisher, that's the way they're looking at it. The first thing they're going to ask me is, who's the audience for this? If you're writing nonfiction, it's almost essential that you have what they call a platform. And I always say the platform means two things. It means the authority to write about the subject you're writing about, something like an endowed chair at Harvard, or access to the media, something like sleeping with Oprah's hairdresser, preferably both. And that's very important. You know, like everything else, there's always ways of, there are always exceptions to the rule. And I do have some clients who had no platform at all. Fiction is more about the novel.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's who's going to read the novel. I got one novel that was a brilliant novel, and I actually found an editor who was really excited about it, but when she took it to the acquisition board, they said, well, you know, this is sort of too dark for women's reading groups. So they rejected it on a marketing decision, not on an aesthetic decision.
Sad.
Well, that's, you know, what they say about publishing is it's the marriage of art and commerce, and unfortunately right now it's kind of an S&M relationship with, you know, commerce is the dominant part.
You're listening to Writers on Writing. I'm with Bay Area literary agent Andy Ross. So will you check out a writer's platform after they query you?
Well, if it's nonfiction, platform is essential, and for nonfiction, again, it's all based on a book proposal. You don't have to write the whole book. You just have to have... this proposal is like a business plan. I mean, you have to have kind of an overview. They're very structured. You have an overview. You try to analyze the audience for the book. You analyze competitive titles, which will be an indicator of whether that audience is robust, whether they're likely to buy a book. You can't really say the audience for my women's health book is all women who care about health. I mean, that's not really an audience. It's a demographic. Of essentially half the women in the world. And then they have to write about themselves, where they kind of lay out their platform, and then they have to have an outline of the book, and then they have to have a sample chapter to see how they can write.
Mm-hmm.
With fiction, again, it's a much more emotional reaction. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, which is why you need the entire manuscript, right? I mean,
I mean, I see a lot of stuff that I get excited about, and I always ask people to send 10 pages first. And in most cases, I put it down, sometimes at the end of the first page. But if I'm at page 10 and I'm still engrossed in it, I'll ask for the rest of the manuscript, and I'll keep reading it until something happens that turns me off. And on those very rare occasions, I find myself reading the last paragraph of the book at 3 in the morning, crying like a baby, and that's really what I'm looking for. You know, with fiction, it's you can teach the craft of fiction, okay? You can get an MFA, you can go to writers' conferences, you can, and you can learn about point of view and writing a voice and writing a... description of the scene, but what I'm looking for is the next level up above that, which is sort of ineffable, and it's very difficult or impossible to teach.
Talk about that, though, the next level up from that. What is that?
It's ineffable. I don't know what it is, but I know it when I see it.
Yeah,
And I saw it with Connie Waters' Beauty of the Broken, which is coming out at the end of this month. It's a lesbian coming-of-age story. It's a teen novel, although she didn't know that. She thought it was literary fiction because she does have this literary style, but that the first paragraph was electrifying. It had voice. Voice is another somewhat ineffable term, but I know it when I see it. And it kept getting better.
Mm-hmm.
Until that last page. Now, that all that being said, you know, one of the things about fiction, I think, is that authors don't have a lot of perspective. I mean, why should they? This story has been in their head for 5 years, and everything is alive to them, but not necessarily to the reader. So I've never found a novel, no matter how talented the author is, that's ready to go.
Hmm.
You know, they all need a lot of work. And, you know, one of the most fulfilling things that I do is make a difference, and you know, it's a very creative job for me. I thought I was going to be kind of like a real estate agent, except representing books and stuff. But I get very much involved in the creative process, and these books that finally come out, and I'm excited about all of them because, you know, I reject almost everything. You know, I'm really proud of my participation in the process.
Now, you said you reject almost everything, and some time ago I heard a line or something that agents are always looking for a reason to say no. Is that true?
Yes, because editors are always looking for a reason to say no.
Mm-hmm.
We're always trying to psych out how editors think, and I actually wrote a blog about that. And by the way, I have a blog where I write about all this kind of stuff, and it's called Ask the Agent. And some of it's kind of whimsical, and some of it is I think, trying to give tips to writers, and some of it is ranting about current events like Amazon and stuff like that. I am always looking for a reason to say no. And my experience is that, you know, I get 20 queries a day. 99% of them I reject. So there's very good empirical reasons why I am going to say no.
Mm. So are conferences good for meeting writers, or are they best for agents because they can often meet editors?
Well, both. I haven't picked up very many books from conferences. I've picked up a few. I picked up Beauty of the Broken, but Tawny Waters was on the faculty. I was just at the Taos Summer Writers Conference, which is a wonderful conference. Very serious writerly conference, and I met a novelist there, also on the faculty, and we're working together.
So, where do most of your clients come from? Is it the slush pile? Is it recommendations or referrals?
Well, both. I usually have better batting average with referrals,
mm-hmm.
Although I reject a lot of those too. But I do find things in the slush pile, and I look at the slush pile every day. Last year, more than half of my books came from the slush pile. And interestingly enough, I get stuff from the slush pile from award-winning authors. It's not just kind of, you know, I think a lot of authors think the slush pile is just goes to the wastebasket, but it doesn't. You know, people have gotten, you know, six-figure deals from books in the slush pile.
Hmm. Interesting. What about, there was something I wanted to, oh, yeah, fiction. So short stories. I see here on your bio that you don't do short stories. You know, it's so interesting to me that it seems that short stories are gaining in popularity and that people have shorter attention spans. And so you would think that short story collections might be gaining in popularity as well, but they're not.
Well, it's just hard to sell short stories. And the ones that do sell are usually people who've written a novel and it's kind of a two-book deal, or they're New Yorker writers, they have a huge platform, or something like that. I wouldn't expect to find just kind of randomly looking at people who do short stories or going to conferences. It's hard enough to sell full-length fiction. It would be almost impossible to sell a short story. Now, if I got something from an established writer with a very big following, I would definitely try to sell a short story, but I'm not looking for it out there in the world.
Yeah. So if a writer is writing short stories and loves the form and is hoping to get an agent for their collection, a couple of things. Would it make more sense to try to publish these stories first so that you can say they've been published here and there? And would it also make sense to say, I'm also working on a novel?
Well, you don't have to say you're working on a novel, but you do have to have, if you're doing short stories, you have to have a fiction platform. And that means publishing in literary magazines. You know, that's not really good enough for short stories. I get a lot of stuff from people who publish in literary magazines, and it isn't always that good. Sometimes it is. But it's better than nothing. Winning awards is good, but again, for short stories, the awards have to be extremely prestigious.
Hmm. And yet there's so many people writing short stories.
As they should. You know, The last line of Albert Camus' Myth of Sisyphus is, the struggle itself is enough to fill a man's heart. And I think if you're a writer, realistically, most fiction is not going to get published no matter how good it is. So you have to write it because you love it.
Interesting. We are going to take a very short break. We will be right back with more Andy Ross, so please don't go anywhere.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for. No religion to. Imagine all. Join us.
Welcome back to Writers on Writing on 88.9 KUCI FM. We're broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine campus, and we're on the web at KUCI.org and iTunes at College Radio. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and we've been here with Bay Area literary agent Andy Ross. Before we bring him back on, to say that this podcast, along with hundreds of other podcasts, you can find at penonfire.com. And this one will go up in the next couple of weeks, hopefully. And there's a lot up there, a lot of, writers, literary agents, poets, whatever you want, we've got it. And we do intend to podcast most shows. Sometimes it doesn't work out, but most of the time it does. Coming up in the next half hour, Andy and I are going to talk about query letters. And if you want to follow along with one query letter in particular that I'm going to ask him about, go to andyrossagency.wordpress.com. And that'll be coming up in just a few. So hello again.
Hi.
Hey. What? You know, before we get into the query letter, because it's so important and such a point of entry for most writers who are seeking an agent, do you have any opinions on that you even care to go into on the whole Amazon hashtag kind of fiasco?
Well, I thought you'd never ask. Amazon, you know, it's a complicated story because there's so many things that Amazon does very, very well. Their customer service is excellent. And their prices are low, and they have a huge amount of information on their website. It's a very good website. I use it a lot just for information. All that being said, I really think, not to put too fine a point, that Amazon has become kind of dangerous to the culture of books. All monopolies are dangerous, and monopolies that on the distribution of ideas are particularly troubling, and that's kind of what's happened with Amazon. One of the problems is, there's a lot of self-published books now, which I think is a good thing, but self-publishing has kind of gotten oversold. The good thing about Amazon is you can get every book in print practically, I guess with the exception now of a lot of Hachette books. But they're available on Amazon. On the other hand, there's so many books there that it's really hard to make an intelligent choice. There's a book out called The Paradox of Choice by a psychologist. Very good. And the point that he tries to make is when you have too much choice, you kind of get overwhelmed and you narrow your choices. So at Amazon, you have over 4 million choices to make, and people tend to focus on these kind of bestseller lists. And they've done studies to show that many more people find books through browsing a bookstore than they do by buying online. Online purchasing tends to be for books they already know they want. So that's one of the problems. Now, the problem with Hachette illustrates another problem, which is the problem of market power. Amazon is a very, very tough negotiator. And at this point, they have gotten to the point where they are working with publishers so that publishers just can't make a profit. This is not a good thing. And they have the power to essentially make sure their books will not be sold online, since the preponderance of books online are from Amazon. This is a dangerous thing. I had a book by a different publisher where a similar problem was going on. They couldn't reach an agreement, and my book was not available. They'd taken the buy button off of the new book. You could buy it used from Amazon, but you couldn't buy it new. And that's essentially what's going on with Hachette books. Amazon is actually even they've gotten a little more sophisticated. Instead of taking off the buy button, they say the book won't be available for 6 weeks. Well, with Amazon, as you know, if a book's out of stock, you can usually get books in about 2 days. And they also put on, if you can't find this book, they made a lot of alternatives. This is very troubling to me and to authors as well.
Yeah, me too. And I don't know. I've been boycotting buying on Amazon for the last couple of months because it's just upsetting. So I'm just, I agree though. I use it for research and, you know, it's a great website. Amazon has a great website. But if I can buy something somewhere else now, I will. Anyway, what about self-publishing?
Well, self-publishing is definitely an option, and for a lot of people, it's the only option because it's become so hard to get through the gate of traditional publishing. And again, like I said, it's not about quality. Now, the problem with self-publishing, you know, I mean, a lot of these guys, they are sort of inspirational speakers, and they say, you know, that traditional publishing is dead, blah, 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 blah. And I think self-publishing to some extent has been oversold. I self-published the best of my blog, and I don't have a particularly robust business model because all the material you can get for free, and I'm charging $2.99 for my, it's an e-book. But, and the problem is most of the books in self-publishing just aren't very good because there are no gatekeepers.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are extremely good, but it's very difficult to find them, so that most self-published books sell very few copies. Some of them don't. I mean, you hear stories of people who sell, John Locke is one of them, and they sell hundreds of thousands of copies, and their royalty rate is 70% on their e-books. But that is very much the exception that proves the rule.
Hmm. I wonder, you know, I've thought self-publishing is perhaps a better idea for someone who is doing a nonfiction book, who is out there speaking, who is a marketer, who is...
Yeah, absolutely. There are a lot of books that could do very well in self-publishing and probably aren't going to get published by a traditional publisher. The example I use would be How to Run Your Own School Book Fair, you know, something which has a very distinct and narrow audience, but one that's highly motivated to buy the book and one that's easy to market online. That would work better as a self-published book.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if it's something about the history of Thomas Jefferson and the founding of the new American Republic, you know, it would be very tough.
Or a novel.
Oh, novels are extremely difficult. Although, interestingly, certain types of genres are doing very well self-published. Romance fiction, sort of, we call it downmarket women's fiction, sort of a disparaging term.
Yeah.
They do quite well. There's a lot of sort of paranormal YA books, and there's a lot of publishers, actually, now that are primarily doing e-books.
Hmm. Yeah, and I know a few writers who write under a pseudonym and publish erotica as singles, Amazon singles, and e-books, and are, you know, raking in some bucks.
Well, there's lots of new models coming out almost every day. One of my clients just did a book for SheBooks, which is a new company that was started by Laura Frazier,
mm-hmm.
and what they're looking to do is they're looking for books or for stories of 10,000 words or less, usually women's memoirs. So it's more like a somewhat longer than a long-form article in The Atlantic or something like that. And they're doing it as e-books, and I think they're doing pretty well.
Mm, interesting.
And they even pay advances, which was shocking to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is shocking. You're listening to Writers on Writing. I'm with Andy Ross. He's a Bay Area literary agent. Okay, I want to talk about the query letter.
Query letter, okay.
Well, I just, you know, I loved it when I saw it on Facebook the other day, the whole thing. I think Lori Fox posted, and your query letter, the perfect query letter, written by Tolstoy, and it, you know... I guess with query letters, you've got to get it all in, and so, you know, Tolstoy certainly gets it all in this query letter. But, you know, for instance, though, you know, when we go to, okay, so the first paragraph is what you're submitting, I am submitting War and Peace, a 350,000-word work of historical fiction. Okay, so most writers can do that easily enough. The second paragraph where Tolstoy tells about War and Peace, I mean, that, well, you don't want to give too much away, right? But you have to tell enough in that second paragraph.
The problem isn't giving too much away. And by the way, Entre Nous, I do not want this spread around, but this query letter was not actually written by Tolstoy. It was a forgery by a certain unscrupulous literary agent who shall be unnamed on the show. But the point that I was trying to make... Oh, did I just give it away? The point that the unnamed literary agent was trying to make is it was almost an insuperable challenge of taking the longest book in the Western canon, one of the most complicated plots ever written, 350,000 words, and reducing to what we call an elevator pitch. It's an annoying term that came out of Hollywood, but it's basically telling what the story is while you're on the elevator. And I reduced the story and the importance of War and Peace to six sentences, and I'm very proud of that. And I think I did a pretty good job, although probably some literary critic would dispute that.
So if you are not someone who can, you know, has much alacrity with writing this elevator pitch paragraph, what are important things to remember about doing it?
Well, I think the real challenge, I mean, the reason it has to be so short, and some agents want them longer than other agents, is you have to be aware that agents are deluged with query letters. I get 20 a day, and I know some agents get far, far more than that. Some of them just don't read them. But I read query letters from my slush pile every day.
How far do you read? I mean, will you read a sentence and put it away at times?
I've been known to, yeah. I mean, there's some real turnoffs. Like, if you start off on the first paragraph, first of all, you should know your terms of art. If you start off in the first paragraph by saying, this is a fiction novel, that's usually an indicator that, you know, that you're not a good writer. I mean, why, you know, all fiction is, all novels are fiction. If you say it's a nonfiction novel, then I strongly suggest you not do that. But typically, you know what I do first is really I go to the third paragraph, which should be about the author. And if it looks like the author's a serious writer or has some other platform for nonfiction, that's something that catches my attention. Then I go on back to the second paragraph to see what this book is about. But because I'm getting 20 a day, I don't have a lot of time for that. So you got to have a really short elevator pitch that is going to interest an agent. And from then, if I do get interested, I'll ask for more. And I find good things that way. Now I realize this is not a scientific way of finding good books, and I'm always concerned that that I've missed something, because this is a pretty superficial way of analyzing books, but there's just no other alternative.
Can you hear the writer's voice in a query letter?
I mean, not necessarily. Mm-hmm. Probably not. Voice is very difficult to comprehend without actually seeing the text. There's a lot of stuff that I see in query letters that I think just waste time, and they're sort of kind of omnibus words. I was just giving this class in query letters at the Taos conference, and everybody had bad query letters, at least when they started. They were just too long, and one of the person commented on whether they should, he called it sucking up to the agent, and the answer is no.
What would be an example of that?
I understand that you represent Daniel Ellsberg. I am overwhelmed by your knowledge of politics. Also, I used to shop at Cody's, and I loved every minute of it. There's nothing exactly wrong with that, unless you say, after you mentioned Daniel Ellsberg, you say that, you know, they're submitting to me some erotica or something that has nothing to do with Daniel Ellsberg. It's just a waste of time. You can better use the few words that you have and the very short time you have to get my attention to get right down to what I want to know, which is what's the genre of the book, what is the book, very briefly, why is it important, and who am I to write about it?
So say you are submitting a query letter for a novel and you haven't been published. You're not a published novelist. You're not an author of a best-selling novel. You have no work that's ever been made into a movie. It's your first novel. I mean, you know, maybe you have a few little literary publications, maybe not. So how do you deal with that paragraph? And how do you, as far as, you know, whatever the theme of your novel is, show that you're the one who should write this book or who has written this book since it's a novel?
Well, that's very hard.
Yeah.
Usually those kinds of things, they're referrals. Toni Waters is a debut novelist, but I met her at a writer's conference, and she was on the faculty. She had award-winning nonfiction. And the first novel she sent me, I didn't really want to publish. It was, I could see she had talent, but I could also see it would be a challenge to get published. And she said, well, I've got this other thing under the bed. I wrote it 6 years ago. Would you take a look at it? And I knew, again, on the first paragraph that I had the real thing.
Hmm.
But, yeah, fiction is very difficult on a query letter. I got one from Anjanette Delgado, which is the other novelist, the novel that's coming out. But she had previously been published. Her book didn't work all that well, but it was published from a major publisher, and that book won the International Latino Book Award twice, once for English, once for Spanish. That got my attention very quickly. That's a major award.
Do you look at, if somebody's had a book published, do you look at the numbers, what it sold?
Yeah, I do, because publishers do, and those numbers are pretty available. There's this entity which is owned by the Nielsen company called BookScan,
mm-hmm.
and it tracks sales at the point of sale. So it isn't 100% accurate, but it gives you an indicator of whether the book is successful or not. Most literary fiction isn't, and you know, it's not the final word for me, actually. I usually, but it's a challenge when I try to sell it. I'm looking for a good story well told. And if they have a previous book that didn't do well, but that I have gotten kind of smitten with, the new book, I will work with it. But I always warn them that the batting averages here just aren't very good.
Do certain, in terms of fiction, do certain genres that you represent work better than others?
Well, it's easier to sell teen fiction. YA fiction's kind of hot right now. But still, it isn't that easy. And it has to be very good. And very good is not necessarily good enough. Literary fiction is extremely difficult to sell. Thrillers sell really well in the market, but they tend to be platform-driven, so it's hard to break into the world of thrillers.
Hmm. Okay. Interesting. Okay, so in terms of then, you know, query letters and 20 a day, could there be a week that goes by that you don't want to see any of the author's work? You don't want to see those first 10 pages? Or is, you know,
a month.
Really?
Goes by. Yeah, I request 10 pages very rarely. And most of the time when I get them, I end up putting them down. And sometimes I request them because the story is kind of intriguing. And the author has some, you know, indicator that they have some ability. Sometimes they've published in a small literary journal or something, but sometimes not. And I do look at those, but honestly, I get 20 a day. What is that, 5,000 a year? And I would pick up from the slush pile very little fiction, probably less than five, and more nonfiction. It's easier for me to tell, based on a query letter, whether it's going to be a subject that would be interesting as a nonfiction book.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, in terms of being a writer looking for an agent, what are a couple of the most important things you should really focus on in terms of that particular agent? Should you focus on or want to know where the agent has contacts or where the agent has sold books or...
Well, that's a very good question, and it's an important question. And first of all, a lot of writers, I think, are intimidated by the process of finding an agent, and it isn't that complicated, and you don't need to be intimidated, but you have to do your work. And here's what I would recommend. It's kind of a two-step process. The first thing you should do is, well, there's a lot of questions you should be asking yourself about whether your book should be submitted to a commercial publisher anyway. A lot of people, I see a lot of things that they should know in advance. It just doesn't have a chance of getting published. But that being said, when you're finally ready to find an agent, you want to look at kind of, there's a number of databases that are available. The one that I always recommend is agentquery.com. It's online. It lists not every agent. It's somewhat curated. And by the way, if you find an agency that's going to charge you money up front, in all probability, it's a scam. Don't do it. It's a red flag. Agents, reputable agents, charge are driven by commission only. If they don't sell your book, it doesn't cost anything. But I would look at something like agentquery.com. There's some other ones as well. And you can sort them according to a number of criteria. One would be whether they're looking for new projects at all. And another would be people who are specifically requesting books in your genre. So if you're writing a memoir, people will say that they are looking for memoirs or they're not looking for memoirs. If you're doing children's books, it's another genre. Literary fiction. Some people don't want to work in fiction at all. So then you compile a list, which would be a very long list, and then you would go to their websites. And there's two things you want to see on their websites. One is kind of who they are and whether it feels good, whether it looks like they have credentials. And they all list their books. If they have no books at all, that would be a concern. You shouldn't get intimidated by big names. I went to an editor once who I send things to, and I said, well, what kind of books are you looking for? And she said, well, I'm the editor for Barack Obama. Well, I was intimidated, although I did continue sending her books, and she wants to see them. Mm-hmm. Agents and editors are inveterate name droppers, so don't get intimidated by that. And then the most important thing you should do is every agent's website has a submissions page. Look at that submission page, and they will give you guidelines. Some people only want electronic submissions. Some people only want physical submissions. That's getting rarer and rarer. Some people want your query letter, or they want 10 pages immediately. Some people will request it. You know, there's all sorts of small things, and you've got to look at that. A lot of writers think that they will, you know, that they're better off going with a New York agent. That isn't true anymore. Most nonfiction is decided on book proposals. Most fiction is decided by actually how good the book is, the publisher's lunch, and the, you know, who's friends with whom and who's sleeping with whom doesn't really matter. I've tried that. So it doesn't matter whether your agent's in New York or not. It generally doesn't matter if it's a big agency or not. I know people who've been very badly served by prestigious agents. Mm-hmm. I have a novel that's going around now. It was taken on by one of the most prestigious agents in New York. He was just too busy. He sent it out to the same 10 editors, and they gave very good feedback. And they all had the same feedback, essentially, which was some flaws in the manuscript that I saw right away. He should have pulled the manuscript, had to rewrite it, and then send it to the 30 more who would make a good home for this book. He didn't do that. He was either too busy or too lazy. I don't know what. She was not well served by this very prestigious agent. The most you can say about him was that the editors were kind of kissing up to him, and they wrote very detailed rejection letters. I'm not sure that that's the goal of the author, is to have a better quality rejection letter.
Mm-hmm. You're an AAR agent. Do you feel that designation is important? I mean, it's important to me when I'm looking at agents. How important is it?
It's important, but not necessarily determinative, because one of the things about AAR, which is the Association of Author Representatives, kind of the trade association of is it is very selective. You have, in order to get in, you have to have done X number of deals in the past 12 months, and a lot of agents haven't. So the people who are AAR agents are really in business as agents. It's a very selective group of people, and it is there's about 300 of them, I think. Now, on the other hand, I know some extremely successful agents who are not members. They don't bother. They don't want to spend their $150 a year, and they don't need to. I would not use that necessarily as a criterion for deciding if the agent is for real or not. I would. It would be better for you to use a broader spectrum of agents in one of these larger databases, and then go to their website, and from that you can decide if they're legitimate or not.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And actually, if you're new, if you got a debut novel, or if you don't have a platform, you're probably better off with a person who's been who's still building their list, who isn't famous, who has got the energy to focus on you more, and the motivation to send your book out as widely as possible. I think you'd be better off that way. You don't want a complete newbie, although, frankly, you know, I was a newbie at one point, and I worked pretty hard and did a good job. But I was also willing to take more risks than I am, for instance, now.
Yeah. Do you think chemistry is important between an agent and client, or should you really be looking at the business and forget about chemistry?
Chemistry is very important, but it's hard to know the chemistry until actually after you've been working with them for a while.
Sort of like a matched marriage, you know?
In a sense, it is, but chemistry is important. I know that some of the clients I have gotten were resulting from phone calls where they just had a good feeling about me. But, you know, sometimes that doesn't work. You might have people who are charismatic personalities, such as myself, but they may not be the greatest agents, unlike myself.
Oh, that's great. It sounds like you're probably a wonderful agent. And
I would say so. Actually, you know, I got to tell you, I don't want to brag, but this year, two of the books that are coming out this year, they dedicated the books to me, and I think that's a good sign of... that doesn't happen that often. I mean, the agent really had to have an impact, and I think that's a good indicator.
Yeah, I would say so. We are at the end of our time. Do you have any last words to offer the writers listening, perhaps writers who are ready to look for an agent?
Well, you know, the rejection is a big part of this business. It's a big part for me, and it's definitely a big part for you. And I can only imagine how hard it is to get a dismissive rejection, and most of them really kind of are. Usually I just say, this isn't for me, which is true, after you've been working on something for 5 years, but you really have to get a thick skin about this. It usually isn't about the quality of your work or you as a human being. It's about the fact that this is a business and it's just hard to get things published. Mm-hmm. So you got to be able to handle that. One of the biggest problems I've had as an agent is with authors who are having incredible difficulties handling rejection, and it's a very painful process.
Mm. Yeah, it sure is, and something you have to contend with if you want to get your work out there. Right?
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Andy, for taking the time to be on the show.
Thank you, Barbara. I really had a good time.
You're welcome. That was Andy Ross. He's a literary agent in the Bay Area. If you missed his website, you can just Google him at Andy Ross Literary Agency, and you'll find his website with the book cover that you'll click on and find all kinds of good stuff on it. And we are at the end of our time. You've been listening to Writers on Writing on 88.9. KUCI FM. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and we'll see you here next week.